Pride erects a little kingdom of its own and acts as sovereign over it. It's a quote by William Hazlitt. A couple of unknown quotes, unknown authors. Pride will cost you everything and leave you with nothing. Another one, pride is concerned with who is right. Humility is concerned with what is right. One by Ezra Taft Benson, pride is a sin that can be readily seen in others, but rarely admitted in ourselves. Maybe you'll recognize some of these. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before the fall. These are scriptures. Better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. This phrase, divide the spoil, is to enjoy the riches or enjoy rich things with the proud. It's better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to take in of the riches with those who are proud. That's from Proverbs 16, verse 18 and 19. Jameson Fawcett Brown says, haughtiness and pride imply self-confidence, which produces carelessness and then, hence, a fall, or literally, a sliding. A couple commentaries point out the personification where pride is walking along and finds destruction and a haughty spirit marches into ruin. God's word is filled with examples of these two particular characteristics of pride and humility. Pride was Satan's or Lucifer's original sin. He was created and he said he was perfect from the day he was created. And it was his sin and his pride that led him in a wrong direction. And it can be a sin that leads to other sin. If it is not recognized, as some of these quotes pointed out, then if we can't see it in ourselves, we can begin to go down a wrong road or path that will lead to other sin without even realizing it because of pride. It's also a sin that most can't see or don't want to see in themselves. We can usually recognize it very quickly in others. Oh, yeah, that individual's, he's proud or he's overconfident or he's this and that. And we don't always see it in ourselves. Let's go to James chapter 4, verse 6. I chose this particular topic because it's shortly before the fall holy days, and to see, as we will on the Day of Atonement, the one who has led individuals into the same attitude of pride, and to focus on these particular two characteristics. James chapter 4 and verse 6, it says, but he gives more grace, therefore he says, God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Again, we understand what grace is. It's unmerited pardon, but it's also an opening of a relationship with God. So God says, I will open up this relationship to the humble. It's repeated in 1 Peter. I won't take the time to turn there, but 1 Peter 5 and verse 5 and 6. It says, likewise, you younger, submit yourself to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive one to another and be clothed with humility. Now, we read of descriptions of those who are in white linen, and we know that that's a symbol of purity. Here it says, be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. The same statement. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. He said, there's a time that you will be exalted. Just as it says, the sons of God will be revealed or made manifest. But he says we have to humble ourselves. What's meant by this phrase, the proud? God resists the proud. Because it sounds like a group of people, and it is. It's those who have this attitude. From Strong's, the word is huperephanos, and it means appearing above others, haughty or proud. Now, we don't use the phrase haughty very often, and that's not H-O-T-T-Y, like haughty, that is H-A-U-G-H-T-Y, a haughty attitude. Dictionary.com says This word describes haughtier, haughtiest, disdainfully proud, snobbish, scornful, arrogant, haughty aristocrats, a haughty sales clerk, or somebody who considers himself to be lofty. Being haughty or proud may not only be a description of those who think better than themselves, or better than think of themselves better than others. We often think of somebody who's haughty as, oh, they think they're above everybody else. But this word, haughty or proud, goes beyond that description. It may point to that regardless, but it does go beyond that. Barnes Notes describes proud as the proud are those who have an inordinate self-esteem. Now, this word self-esteem, years ago, I began to be changed. Oh, you need to raise your self-esteem. You need to develop self-esteem. You need to think highly of yourself so you can be successful. Self-esteem can be a negative thing as well. But it says the proud are those who have an inordinate self-esteem and who have a high and unreasonable conceit of their own excellence or importance. They picture themselves being far more important than they really are. This may extend to anything. And it's interesting because I want to go through some of these. Barnes describes this word, proud or haughty, and he says it's an inordinate self-esteem, but it extends to anything, including beauty, strength, attainments, family, country, equipage, rank, or even religion. Most wouldn't think of, oh yeah, this person is so proud about their religion or their beliefs. Yet that is something that actually takes place. I want to look at a few of these, each one independently, because we've probably seen this attitude of somebody who considers themselves higher than others or has an inordinate self-esteem in these various areas, like beauty. Most of the time when we think of somebody who's full of pride, we think, oh yeah, this is the person who just thinks they are the best looking person in the world. There's one individual that I just, every time I think of pride in this particular way, I think of, and it's a guy, I think of him when I was in YRU. I actually got to become a part of YRU when I was 11 years old. And this particular individual, this was in the late 70s, early 80s. And so the feathered hair, you know, parted in the middle, feathered hair, and every time he walked by a mirror, he would throw his hair back, and he would had a brush he kept in his back, or comb in his back pocket, and he would always comb his hair and just look at himself for the longest time, and he couldn't pass, in the locker room, couldn't pass a mirror without stopping and just admiring how beautiful he was. I think of this when I think of pride over beauty. Proverbs 31:30 says, favor is deceitful. Beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Said, favor is deceitful and beauty is vain. Vain meaning it's worthless, it's going to pass. Now, we can think, well, I've got to stay beautiful as long as I can. And people do that today. And they start changing their looks, changing their faces, using Botox to change the figure, to remove all the wrinkles, and in many cases, it makes them look odd or different far more than it does beautiful. But they want to continue trying to have this beauty and hold on to something that is vain. It's temporary. Beauty is only there for a little while, and a person may have a muscular physique or a great physique, but it's going to fade. It's going to drop. It's going to grow. Over time, we fight that. We try to keep and maintain a healthy body, but we realize we're not going to look like we did when we were 17, 18, 19, 20. Ezekiel 28 and verse 17, and in some of these I'm just going to quote, describes Satan, and or Lucifer at the time, and how he fell for and got caught up in pride. Says your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. This particular facet of pride is what Lucifer bought into. You have spoiled your wisdom because of your brightness. He said, you had wisdom, but you spoiled the wisdom because of your brightness, because of how brilliant you were, how beautiful you were. I will cast you to the ground, and I will put you before kings that they may behold you. Part of that is future, which we will discover or discuss on the Day of Atonement. Verse 12 states, you seal the measure full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Now, I don't think any of us have ever met somebody who was perfect in beauty. They couldn't get any better. Well, they may think that of themselves, but we usually don't look at somebody and say they couldn't get any more beautiful or perfect in their beauty. But this is the way that God was describing Lucifer, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. And he said, you lost your wisdom because you were focused on the beauty. His mind became focused on himself and on his own beauty. Another description of pride is people can be proud of their own strength. Now, I don't mean necessarily physical strength, which some are. They're so proud of, I can arm wrestle anybody, I can box anybody, I can take anybody down, that kind of strength. But others pride themselves on strength, and there have been those who think of themselves as better or more faithful. I'm stronger spiritually than anybody else that I know. And you think, well, that's a pretty bold statement, but those are the statements that have actually come from people's mouths. They're more faithful, they're more religious because of their own strength or what they think is their own strength. You know, I have strengths that nobody else, I don't see anybody having the strength that I have in faith or the strength that I have in whatever it may be. Proverbs 20, verse 29 says, the glory of young men is their strength. When you're young, when you're a teenager, and we see this, they think they're invincible. When we go on extended session, they find out, oh, we got guys that are three times my age, and they're able to do this, and I'm wiped out. I'm physically tired. But as a teenager, most of the time, we think we're invincible. And young men, there is strength. But the splendor of old men is their gray head. I'm becoming more and more gray, so I guess that'll be my splendor if I have hair to turn gray. When we are young, we do have physical strength. But as we age, we focus on, okay, I'm not going to have this physical strength forever. I'm not going to be able to lift and carry and do all the things that I did when I was younger. I worked in construction for the early part of my life, and at age 14 started working for a company pouring concrete. That's hard work, very hard work, and to do that day after day after day. So there's energy and strength that we have when you're young, but as we get older, we can't say, that's what I want to, continue to have that strength into my 80s. Well, probably not going to have the strength to do those kind of things, but wisdom and experience and the ability to grow. And that's what Satan lost because of that pride of beauty, but he also lost his strength and the ability that he was given. We all have tough jobs, and sometimes we do tough jobs because of the strength that we have. We're able to do them. But as we get older, wisdom becomes far more important, and we realize that. Some become proud over their bodies and the physical strength that they have. And again, that strength is valuable. They want to accomplish things. They want to develop. But you can't allow that to puff up the mind. Some have pride over attainments, what they have attained, what they have acquired. Some are proud of all that they have. You know, look at everything I have. I have more than anybody I know, and that becomes their pride. How much money they make, what position they hold, how many people they're over. You know how many people I control? I have so many people that I have direct control over, and they all look to me. I have more people that I'm over. And again, that is attainments. Yet is that what we should be focusing on? As a reference, Luke 14, verse 33 tells us, "So likewise, whoever of you who does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple." Again, he's saying we have to be willing to do that, and not everybody has to give up all they have. But if you're not willing to give up everything that you have, then something is wrong. Because everything that we have is physical, and it is, just like beauty, vain. It's passing. If we're not willing to forsake all that we have, he says, you cannot be my disciple. If our pride is in things, physical possessions, physical attainments, then all of that can and most likely will be taken away. It's sad when individuals, and you see them heading this direction, they become so focused on what they have and gaining more. And you know it's heading in a wrong direction. And it's like it says, pride goes to inside an individual, begins to affect their mind to where they're careless and they don't see, and then they fall. And when people focus on things, that is something that the direction that they head in. Luke chapter 12 and verse 15. Luke chapter 12 and verse 15. This has to do with pride over attainments or pride over things. He said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness. Beware of coveting and wanting more. For one's life does not consist of the abundance of things which he possesses." It's not going to be you gained so much, so many physical things in your life. Christ isn't going to look at us and talk about all these wonderful physical things that we acquired. He said, beware of covetousness. And then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentiful. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, this is what I'll do. I'll pull down my barns and build greater barns, and there I will store my crops and my goods. Now you say, well, what's wrong with building bigger barns if you had a bigger crop? But I will say to my soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. You don't need to work anymore. You've got so much money. You've got more than you'll ever need. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose things will be those which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. He said, you lay up those physical treasures and depend on the physical things. And we're talking about what your trust is. He was trusting in, oh, I've got so many things now. I don't have to work anymore. I can just put all this aside because I have everything that I need, except for a relationship with God and trusting in God and giving God the recognition for the blessings that he had received. He says, so is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. Now, one of the things that was mentioned was family. How are people proud when it comes to family? I think all of us have probably seen this. There are many individuals who are proud about their family. How many of you have heard these statements? And these are statements that I've heard. My children are the best behaved. They would never act like that. I've heard that, seen that. Our family has never done anything like that. We're above that kind of thing. And usually what happens is then something happens and that family goes, oh, now I'm embarrassed because I said that. Then something happened like that in my family. It's easy to be proud of families and sometimes being proud of our family for the good things that they've done or recognizing the good things that a family is not wrong. But not when we elevate our families above others, which is common. You know, nobody sings like our family. Nobody acts like our family. Nobody is at the level of our particular family. That's when pride over family can set in. Let's go to Mark chapter 10. There are biblical examples of many of these that are mentioned as a description of those who are haughty or proud. Mark chapter 10 and verse 35. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." Now that's kind of a bold statement in itself. Going to Christ and saying, "We want you to fulfill our every wish." He said to them, "Well, what is it that you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant that we can sit one on your right hand and the other on the left in your glory." That's all. We just want to be the chief people right next to you in your kingdom. Or we think we're something as a set of brothers and we feel that we should be right next to you and receive that recognition. Jesus said to them, "But do you not know what you ask? Are you able to drink of the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I baptize with?" He said, "There's a price. You don't know what you're asking. Do you want to go through what I have to go through?" They said to him, "We are able." And so Jesus said to them, "You will indeed drink of that cup that I drink and the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it's for those whom it is prepared." Yet how many people focus on that in the future, about who they're going to be over? I am going to be so important in the kingdom of God. I've heard individuals say, I'll be a doorkeeper, which is not what God has intended for us for the future. But you have some who say, "Well, I'll be a doorkeeper," and you have others saying, "Nobody's going to be given the power that's given to me or these other people because we've done so much." Again, that's what was going on and taking place in their minds. Verse 41, when the ten heard it, they began to be greatly displeased with James and John. It's interesting. They begin to look down at James and John going, "Can you believe they went and asked that?" Jesus called them to himself and said to them, "You know those that who are considered rulers over the Gentiles, they lord it over them. And their great ones, they exercise authority over them." It's interesting, not lord it. They don't lord them or direct them. They lord it over them, and they exercise authority over them. He was telling them, don't seek power for yourselves and then abuse it. He says, verse 43, "Yet it shall not be so among you, for whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant." He said, "You want to be great? You want to be on my right hand and my left? Then become a servant. Serve other people. And whoever desires to be first shall be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." There were certain things that they didn't understand at first, but as he began to work with them and open their minds to human nature, characteristics of human nature, they began to understand. But he kept focusing on, don't focus on who's going to be the highest authority, who's going to be in charge, who's going to be the most important. He said, serve and become a slave of all. It goes back to humility. What about rank? That was one of the descriptions. Proud over rank. This is what was basically being discussed here with these two brothers. Have you ever met anyone that was proud over a position that they held or a position that they wanted? If you've been in the workforce, you've seen this and probably very familiar with it. I was in sales for 20 years, and you know the description about clawing your way up to the top or running over people to get to the top, watched that many, many times as individuals were proud over what they held, or even individuals who claimed, "I am going to be over all the salespeople. I'm going to move up in the company. I'm going to be CEO of the company. I'm going to be this or that." I have worked with and seen many who were like this over the years. It's one of the basic forms of pride and over-exalted self-esteem. When a person gets promoted or given a position, sometimes their minds become filled with pride. "Oh, they promoted me. That means it's because of my skills and my abilities, so I must be better than everybody here," and they start focusing on themselves. become filled with pride, just as Satan's mind was filled with pride over his beauty. His beauty became corrupted. And so he was so focused on his brilliance and the light that he was assigned, as his name means light, meant light bringer, he became so focused on that that I am the most brilliant thing. I have perfect beauty. And he began to lose the wisdom. 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and in verse 1. This is a faithful saying. If a man desires a position of a bishop or an elder, he desires a good work. Even within the church, when we're talking about rank or position, people have shown this attitude of pride. Individuals who have made the statements, I should be ordained an elder because I have the qualifications and I meet everything that's there. I should be an elder, or I should be a pastor, or I should be working at headquarters with those who are leading from headquarters. A man desiring the position of a bishop, and he desires a good work, is talking about the work that is being done and how that person is serving and what they're doing, not desiring the office, which is exactly what Christ was saying. You desire to lord it over others. You desire to be over people, but not desiring the work. He says in verse 2, a bishop then must be blameless. Oh, you want that position? Be blameless. The husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money. Somebody who's focused on the pride of money or having money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, not somebody who says, okay, I got to have more than everybody else. Over the years, even within the church, and that's what it's talking about here, desiring the position within a church, I've heard people talk about, I have so much money, or I make so much money, or the car that they have. I've got this wonderful car. I don't know if you've seen my car, but this is my baby. This is my beautiful thing. And talk about all the things that they possess. So he says, not covetous. One who rules well his own house, having his children in submission with all reverence. If a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? It doesn't say how will he rule over the church of God. How will he take care of them? The work that is involved and what is required. Notice verse 6, it says, not a novice, not somebody who's new to the church or new to the faith, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. This goes to the heart of what we're talking about. Not being somebody who doesn't have the capacity and the mental strength not to get puffed up with pride. If you pick somebody young and they're going, I've only been in church a year and they're going to ordain me an elder. I must be conquering everything and conquering my human nature. I must be on the right track to everything. Not a novice, lest being puffed up, you fall into that same condemnation of I. Someone who is not ready to handle a position or a title can easily be puffed up, and we have seen it. Sometimes you think, well, that this individual shown by his fruits, and then you put him in a position, and we see them puff up very quickly. The last area that was mentioned that I want to cover is religion. And you think, well, how can you be puffed up over religion? Religion should tell you, no, you need to humble yourself. You need to be abased. But yet people are puffed up over religion. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 3. Paul's lessons to Timothy and Titus cover a lot of positions within the church or the ability of serving within the church. So he says in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 3, if anyone teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which accords with godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing. but is obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which come envy, strife, revelings, evil suspicions. So he said, if you are not consenting to wholesome words, if you start coming up with your own ideas, you start thinking, I know more about this particular subject, so I'm going to teach you from what I know instead of teaching from the Word of God. To the doctrine which accords with godliness. Doctrines which go away from godliness. You know, when years ago people said, well, doctrine and integrity are two different things. Integrity is not scriptural. It's like, no, integrity is very scriptural. That is what doctrine explains and what an individual should have. But he said, if you don't do that, if you don't have doctrine which accords with godliness, then you're proud, knowing nothing. What you thought you knew is false, and it is a matter of pride. Some get wrapped up in thinking, well, I know, and again, we'll defend whatever it is that they feel that they know. I know this, and nobody's going to prove me wrong. Some feel that they have a right way of doing things. This is the way I've always done it, and this is what I've proved to myself is right. Well, did you prove it from Scripture? Nope, I've always believed this. This is what I was always taught. So they feel a certain way, and will defend that. Some feel that others should behave as they do or as they think. Not just, I have it right. It's, you're not doing it the way that I think, and I have proved it's right. There's a very clear symbol of pride. Somebody who says, you have to do it my way because I'm right. Or, you have to think like I do. You have to believe this. Instead of two individuals saying, you know, here's what I believe. And somebody else saying, well, you know, I kind of disagree with that. No, it's here's what I believe. And, well, if you disagree, you're wrong because you have to believe like I do. That's a matter of pride. Again, somebody wrapped up in their own knowledge, their own understanding, or as it says here, their own religion. Some have pet doctrines that they feel that these are so important, these are the greater things that we have to be concerned about, not realizing they may be the only ones who are concerned about those things, or they may be smaller things within the overall scheme of what God is wanting us to learn. But that should tell them something. If nobody else, you know, I'm the only one that's upholding this. You know, not even the ministry, I've heard, not even the ministry of the church understands this the way I understand it. That's probably true. They don't understand it the way you understand it. It should tell them something. Some get worked up over little things or fringe questions or actions, but they become so big in their mind that they become so vitally important. I've seen people leave the church because, you know, I have proved this to myself and nobody's discovered this in God's word except me. Well, it's wrong because of this, this, and this. Nope, I have proved it, and then they leave. They left over pride. The same pride that brought Lucifer down. Others have truths, and I say truths, quote unquote, in their minds, that they feel that they're holding on to, but can never prove. You know, this is what we were always taught. Well, can you prove that? Well, this is what they taught us. Okay, is it in Scripture? Can you prove it? Can you go back and prove what you were taught? Or as we're told, test those things. Put them to the test. Well, I can't prove it, but I feel this and I know this, and I'm not going to give up on this particular thing I believe in. But it's a feeling, or it's a matter of being different. You know, nobody else believes this, so that makes me different, so I'm going to hold on to it because I'm the only one who believes this. It's a matter of pride. Sometimes we've seen pride in action when somebody has special knowledge. They get puffed up over that knowledge. They feel that I have knowledge, and not just I have special knowledge, but I have special knowledge, so therefore I need to share that special knowledge. I need to have others believe what I believe. I've talked to people who have actually told me, I've been called to teach others about this. I have so convinced about this truth that I've learned that I feel that I've been called to teach others. Had one, this was probably 10 or 12 years ago, if not longer, who told me, I have been given a commission to take this to the ministry. God has convinced me that I need to talk to all the ministry of all the organizations and teach them this. Okay? And again, these are true stories. These aren't things I'm making up. These are things that people have said. It's pride in their own knowledge, and yet it's wrong knowledge. Some mentally latch on to what the church has always taught. Again, saying, well, this is what the church always taught, without ever proving it or finding out, is it really what the church taught? I brought it up and they said, well, my pastor taught it. And I said, well, there, that may be true. But did the church teach it and did you prove it? Well, the church taught me. Like, it, here, the responsibility is on the church if the church taught me. No, we're told to prove all things. Finding out sometimes, well, it was a minister who said that. And a lot of times people, even still today, hold on to things. My minister taught me that. Where's your minister now? Well, he left the church. Maybe you should go back and prove those things that you were taught. Sometimes individuals hold on to a myth or idea, but there's no substance to it. It's just an idea, or now becomes a feeling of, I believe this. How can I give this up if I believed in it for 20 years? But did you prove it? Again, there can become a pride over the knowledge that people have. Sometimes they even debate or fight tooth and nail to hold on to something, and you say, well, they're sincere. They're sincere about it. And for many cases, they are. They're very sincere that they believe completely that they're right. But many times, they're wrong. Jim Rohn, motivational speaker, I loved this when I was in sales when I was young. He said, you can't weigh sincerity on truth scales. You can't say, well, they're sincere, so it must be truth. But he also said, you can be sincere, but be sincerely wrong. And I love that statement because people are like, well, if they're sincere, it must be true. No, you could be sincere, but sincerely wrong. You look at people in the world who are so convinced of the beliefs that they have. You have people out there that are so convinced that we should allow abortion within the United States, and they are sincere in their belief. We should have abortion. Yet they're wrong through the descriptions. And again, to have a belief and sincerity doesn't mean that it's truth. Paul says about these individuals, he is proud knowing nothing. If they don't stick to the truth and the words that delivered, they were proud knowing nothing. But they're obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which comes envy, strife, revelings, and evil suspicions. Usually, if something comes up and an individual says, I've got this special knowledge, it causes envy, strife, revelings, and evil suspicions. It's not for the nurturing and the development of a congregation. It's for, I'm going to fight for this because I'm right, as we heard earlier. Being proud is over who's right instead of what's right. I'm right because I believe this. Verse 5, he says, useless wranglings of men, corrupt with corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. He says, when you run into individuals like this, from such withdraw yourself. Well, it's not right of me just to not talk to them just because they're proud or they're causing disputes. No, he says, from what such withdraw yourself. The word envy here means jealousies. Disputing over, but creating jealousy. Or someone who's sharing more odd thoughts and ideas than you. And so sometimes people go, well, they're so intent on telling other people what they believe. I'm going to go out and tell other people what I believe. Here's my thoughts on these things. And sometimes getting in disputes and becoming proud over who has more influence or who they're reaching. Someone else disputing that your proofs are wrong, and a person becomes jealous and starts striving. Let's go go to 1 Samuel chapter 2. Pride and humility go from the beginning, before earth was created. We go to Satan's sin of pride, and it continues throughout until the end of the age. Individuals who still would not repent of their sins because of being stubborn, but also proud. But we also see humility throughout Scripture from the beginning to the end. 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 3. Talk no more so very proudly. Again, sometimes people are proud and you don't know it because they don't talk about it. Others want to talk about it. They want to share that pride. And it's not, I don't think that person's proud. He doesn't talk like that. Sometimes you see it in actions and behaviors. Other times you see it in talk. Talk no more proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is the God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. Not just your talking. He said, don't talk proudly. Don't talk arrogant. The God is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. Clark Commentary states of this, a God of knowledge, he is the most wise, teaching all good and knowing all good things. And yet actions are weighed, meaning they are directed. It's by his counsel that we can successfully begin, continue, or end any work. God will direct you. He says, don't be proud, don't be arrogant. God is a God of knowledge, and actions, by actions you're going to be weighed. You're going to be given the guidelines to bring you within what God is expecting. But it all goes back to what God says and not endless disputes over religion or over knowledge. One of the hardest things about pride is it's usually the people who have it who don't see it in themselves. We're so quick to say, I can probably think of several people who I think have pride or they're full of pride, but yet not see it in themselves. This is from Norman McGowan, My Years with Winston Churchill, Souvenir Press in London. Winston Churchill was once asked, doesn't it thrill you to know that every time you make a speech, the hall is packed to overflowing? He says, it's quite flattering, replied Sir Winston. But whenever I feel that way, I always remember that instead of making a political speech, if I was being hanged, the crowd would be twice as big. Probably true. It's all, like all the looky-loos on the freeway. You want to see what's happened. You want to see what's going on. And if it's horrible, the more traffic gets backed up because they want to see. Sometimes we can get so proud about, look how many people are hearing my message. Well, sometimes it's just humble yourself and go, how many more people would be there if I was kicked out or would be happy about that? I want to look at a few more descriptions of pride before we go on, and I'm just going to turn to some of these passages in Psalms and Proverbs, and we'll start in Psalm chapter 12 and verse 3. And there are numerous passages that talk about pride and humility, two characteristics that are so opposite from one another, and yet people are more proud and tend to be on the more proud side than they do the humble side. Psalms chapter 12 and verse 3. Psalm 12 and verse 3. The Lord shall cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things. He said they will be cut off. The English Standard Version says that the Lord shall cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that makes great boasts. Not just that you're proud of yourself, but sometimes you talk about pride or boast of yourself or you boast of others for personal gain. Psalm chapter 40 and verse 4. Psalm 40 and verse 4. Blessed is the man that makes the Lord his trust and respects not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. They don't look up to those who are proud. And sometimes that's a situation, and it can be even sometimes within the church. You have an individual who prides themselves in their knowledge, and other people look up to them. Oh, I wish I could just be like that. Blessed is the man that makes the Lord his trust. Trust in God. Trust in what God says, and doesn't respect the proud. Sometimes respecting the proud is, oh, let's give them the best seats. Oh, let's treat them the best because they are somebody. Well, if you weren't called by God, we're just like the world. You are somebody, and everybody here is somebody because God has called them to be a part of this. And it's not that, oh, we need to put one or respect one individual who is clearly proud. Psalm chapter 101 and verse 5. Psalm 101 and verse 5. He says, whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, I will cut him off. Him who has a high look and a proud heart, I will not allow. That high look and a proud heart. And yet for most people, they don't see it in themselves. Well, you know, that's not me. I am the most humble person I've ever seen, which is the oxymoron. I'm humble. I'm more humble than anyone I know. It's the opposite, but yet they're full of pride and that high look. Proverbs chapter 15. We'll look at a couple Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 25. The Lord will destroy the house of the proud, but he will establish the border of the widow. There are so many places where God talks about caring for the widow, caring for those who are needy. But he will destroy the house of the proud. And those who focus on pride, whether it be pride of money, pride of position, pride of possessions or attainments, it is headed towards destruction. And God has said that the pride of an individual will bring him to a fall. Proverbs 16 and verse 5. Everyone that is proud in the heart is an abomination to the Lord. Not just, oh, yeah, you've got pride. Pride's an issue. He said, everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. That's how bad God hates pride. It's what caused the first sin and the destruction of Lucifer. And God says, having a proud heart is an abomination. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. God said, it's not going to go undone. We may think, well, we're remaining free from sin. You know, I may have a little pride, but then, you know, that's not a major sin. Proverbs 21 and verse 4. Proverbs 21 and verse 4, it says, a high look, now that means looking highly at yourself or carrying yourself in a way that I'm better than others. A high look and a proud heart and the plowing of the wicked is sin. So if you say, well, I'm pretty much, I've been keeping the commandments, I'm sin-free, I'm humble. That high look and a proud heart, God says, it is sin. Not only to be avoided, it's not just, well, that's an attitude, it's not the commandments. God says it's a sin. Sin is a transgression of the law. The law is about love, not about love for self, but love for others. It is sin, and it was Lucifer's sin. Proverbs 28:5 says, he that is of a proud heart stirs up strife. Those who are proud are very rarely involved in supporting and building and helping others, but they stir up strife. He that puts his trust in the Lord shall be made fat. He said, you want to trust? Trust in God. Or as he said earlier, be willing to give up everything to follow me. One more, Isaiah chapter 13 and verse 11. I'm not going to turn there, but Isaiah 13 verse 11, it says, I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and I will lay low the haughtiness, that arrogance or pride of the terrible. Over and over, God says it's abomination, it's a sin, and it will come to destruction. I want to read a story. This is by Robert Roberts. And some people have that name that just repeats itself twice. Robert Roberts. And it's a story entitled Humility and the Balloon Game. Robert Robert writes of a fourth grade class in which the teacher introduced a game called Balloon Stomp. You've probably seen this, and some of you may have actually played this game before. Balloon was tied to every child's leg, and the object of the game was to pop everyone else's balloon while protecting your own. The last person with an intact balloon would win. We've actually done this at preteen camp. The fourth graders in Robert's story entered into the spirit of the game with vigor. Balloons were relentlessly targeted and destroyed. A few of the children clung to the sidelines like wallflowers at a middle school dance, but their balloons were doomed just the same. The entire battle was over in a matter of seconds, leaving only one balloon inflated. Its owner was, of course, the most disliked kid in the class. It's hard to really win at a game like Balloon Stomp. In order to complete your mission, you have to be pushy, rude, and offensive. Roberts goes on to write that the second class was introduced to the same game, only this time the class was of mentally handicapped children. They were given the same explanation as the first class, and the signal to begin was given. But the game proceeded very differently. Perhaps the instructions were given too quickly for the children with learning disabilities to grasp them. One idea that got through was that the balloons were supposed to be popped. The balloons. So it was the balloons and not the other players that were viewed as the enemies. Instead of fighting each other, they began helping each other pop the balloons. One little girl knelt down and held the balloon carefully in place like a holder for a field goal kicker. A little boy stomped it flat. Then he knelt down and held his balloon for her. And it went like this for several minutes until all the balloons were vanquished and everybody cheered. Who got the game right and who got the game wrong? In our world, we tend to think of another person's success as one less opportunity for us to succeed. When somebody succeeds, you know, we're supposed to rejoice when others rejoice. Sometimes people are put in positions or they're given recognition for things, and we're like, oh, I don't have that. Not because we're excited for them. But as it says here, one other person's success is sometimes looked at as less opportunity for us. There can only be one top dog, one top banana, one big kahuna. If we ever find ourselves in an enviable position, we will fight like mad to maintain and hold it. A lot of companies fail to enjoy prolonged success because the people in charge have this balloon stomp mentality. He goes on, he says, in churches, the rules change. Jesus Christ gets top billing, but we're just here to serve his purposes and do what is most effectively by elevating others and humbling ourselves. It goes back to those two basic principles. In the time left, I want to talk about the opposite of pride, and there are many descriptions of humility and what humility is like. Micah chapter 6 and verse 8. Micah chapter 6 and verse 8. He has showed you, O man, what is good and what the Lord does require of you, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. So he says you do justly, you love mercy, and you walk humbly. The word justly simply means according to God's divine law, or following God's commandments. You walk justly. You walked as the just, those who are living by the laws of God. Adam Clark puts it this way, to do justly is to give all their due, meaning you serve others. You give God his due. You give your neighbor his due. You give yourself your due. And then we're to love mercy, not only what justice requires, but also mercy, kindness, benevolence, and charity, and what they require. But how are we to do this? He says, you are to walk humbly with your God, or to humble yourself to walk that way. Sometimes we have to humble ourselves to walk a certain way. Well, I just don't feel comfortable going up and asking somebody if they need help, or going up and offering my services because I don't know them. What if I offend them? So I just won't say anything to them. I won't do what is necessary. Sometimes we have to humble ourselves and go, you know what, even if I get rejected, I've gone up and asked them if they need help, and I would love to be able to serve them. To humble yourself to walk that way and to walk humbly with God. So what does walking humbly with God look like? What does it mean? It's an easy statement. Say, well, you should walk humbly with God. What does it mean? Proverbs 16, verse 19 says, better it is to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. He said, it's better to be of a humble spirit with those who don't have much than to have all these great riches and you're surrounded by people who are proud. James chapter 4 and verse 5. James chapter 4 and verse 5. He says, or do you think the scripture says in vain, the spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously, but he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And again, we read that again in 1 Peter 5:5. That likewise, you younger, submit to the elders, be clothed in humility. We talked about what it means to be clothed in humility. But I want to go read from Barnes' notes. Albert Barnes describes being clothed in humility. It occurs nowhere else in the New Testament. It is derived from a word kombos, meaning a strip or string or loop that fastens a garment. But it's not just that fastens any garment. He says, it refers particularly to a long white apron or outer garment that was commonly worn by slaves. So when he tells us to be clothed in humility, the word and that one time that it is used describes put on the clothing of a servant, a garment worn by slaves. He says, see Robinson Lexicon, Passau Lexicon. There is and therefore a special force in the one use of this word denoting a humble mind, willing to take any place, to perform any office, however humble, in order to serve and to benefit others. So to be clothed in humility is not just, okay, I just need to be humble. No, it is to put yourself in the position of a servant and to serve others. He says it's a style and dignity of state of authority as if the Lord would lord it over others, or if they would be better than others, but rather that they were willing to occupy any station, however humble, by which it might be an honor to God. So there's more to being clothed with humility than just trying to put on humility. Sometimes people put on and act like they're humble. Proverbs 22:4 says, humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Humility and the fear of God are riches, honor, and life. He said this is where it's most important. Proverbs 18:12, before destruction of the heart of a man is haughty, and before honor is humility. He said, before you're going to be honored and recognized, there has to be humility. Now we can ask, well, is all humility good? We looked at pride, and we can obviously and clearly say, well, pride is wrong. We talked about a pride, if you're proud of something that somebody's done or that your children have done, that's a little bit different than having a pride as an arrogance or haughty spirit. But is all humility good? Just like with other things, even humility can be misused. Let's go to Colossians chapter 2 and verse 23. You'll see what I mean. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 23. These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion. Now, it's interesting how it puts that, because some religions are self-imposed. You look at the Pharisees and all the restrictions that they put on themselves. That is a self-imposed religion. So some have an appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion, false humility, and neglect of the body, but are of no value against the indulgence of the flesh. So he talks about a false humility. We can't think, well, if I just act humble then, I just need to put on and act like I'm humble, then I'll be doing what's right. False humility falls right in with hypocrisy, trying to act like something you're not, pretending to be something you're not, and in some cases convincing yourself, well, I am humble, when you may not be. I've heard a number of people who have talked about how humble they are. You know, I'm so glad. Pride is the farthest thing. I could care less about pride. I am more humble than, and they go on and on about their humility, and all it is word vomit. It's just talking and yet no value to it. Psalm 138, verse 6 says, though the Lord is on high, yet he regards the lowly, but the proud he knows from afar. He keeps them at a distance, yet he regards the lowly. And lowly is another word for the humble. So do we want to get closer to God? God says, lose the pride, because I'm going to keep you at a distance if you have pride. Sometimes it's those who feel that they're at their spiritual best who are blind to their own pride. No, I'm doing everything I should. I'm right on top. I'm at the top of my game spiritually. Mark chapter 12 and verse 38. Mark chapter 12 and verse 38. He said to them and his teachings, beware of the scribes. So he gives a warning not to be like the scribes, who desire to go around in long robes. Now, he wasn't saying long robes are wrong. You know, you go home on Saturday night and put on a long robe. No. Barnes notes describes this in long flowing robes as significant of their consequence, leisure, and learning. They had robes that they would put on that. Oh, that's a person of high education. That's a person of stature. Matthew 23:5 says, but in all their works they do to be seen by men, and they make phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. I want to be seen. I've known individuals who wore tuxedos when they'd like to travel to congregations and perform special music, but they always wore a tuxedo and stood out above everybody else, and it's like, oh, I guess they're here to do special music, and yep, because they wanted to be seen by men. He said they love greetings in the marketplaces. Matthew 23, verse 6 and 7 says, they love the best seats at the feast, the best seats in the synagogues, greetings in the marketplaces, and to be called by men, rabbi, rabbi, teacher. Oh, can you just teach me some of what you know? Barnes says the markets were places where multitudes of people were assembled together, and so they were pleased with the special attention in these public places and desired that all should show them particular respect. Sometimes it's where pride and vanity are displayed in wanting to be recognized for deeds, for actions, service, and ability. If I help set up and take down the hall, nobody ever recognizes me. I've had that said to me before. I'm like, are you doing it to be recognized? Well, no. Well, why is that an issue then? Why do people have that type of attitude? What's the attitude behind the service? Are they serving and helping because they want to help the congregation and they want to contribute? Or I'm serving and nobody's recognizing. There are so many positions within the church where individuals serve and are not recognized. Recently, had a close friend who shared with me, I was able to help at the feast, and I got really involved as basically just running around for the festival coordinator. And it wasn't me, it was another somebody else. And he said, I didn't realize how much is involved in the feast and how many different people are serving in so many different areas. And he said, I had no idea. Because people are serving not with, you know, when you go up there, can you mention what I did yesterday? And I set up the hall, or I ran sound, or I ran. No, they don't do it because of recognition. Do we serve because we want the needs taken care of, or do we serve because we want people to notice us? It goes on in verse 39, the best seats in the synagogues, the best places at the feast, but yet they devour widows' houses and for pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation. I've seen men who are not on the speaking list who have long prayers. They add scriptures to the prayer, and they want to be heard. I've mentioned here before, I've had individuals who, during the prayer, said, you know, what was not said in the sermon and a point that should have been mentioned was this, and then start going off into a point and giving scriptures to back it up. That's absolute pride. It's, I want to speak and I want to give my knowledge and I want to add to this because it wasn't complete until I get my word in. Pride is not always that obvious, but humility is. When somebody remains humble, you can think, well, nobody's noticed that I've done this. You'd be surprised. It's watched. And humility will usually stand out very clearly. People notice and they say, oh, yeah, definitely that person is not about pride. They're humble. They serve. But they don't care about the recognition. It stands out. When somebody does humble themselves and takes a back seat, serves without desire to be noticed or recognition, humility is seen. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. That's what's done when somebody serves to be recognized or serves because they want the recognition of the position or the title. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Some translations say through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. That is the total opposite of pride. Pride is, it's all about me, or as I so many times, and like we read of Satan, I will ascend above God. I will do all these things. Esteeming others better than themselves. Verse 4, let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but for the interest of others. Now, false humility is saying, I don't do anything for myself. I just do it for other people. And you can usually sense very quickly the pride within that. But he doesn't say, don't do anything for yourself. He says, let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but the interest of others. Humility isn't just removing your personal desire and saying, nothing is about me. Everyone has everything they need, and you have nothing, because I'm just removing all of that from myself. It says, look out for your own interests so that we can be in a position to serve. You need to take care of yourself and take care of what you're doing and make sure that you're in a proper and right attitude, but also that you're serving so that you can serve yourself and take care of others. It's summed up in verse 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ. This is after saying, don't have this pride, proud attitude and an attitude of pride, but humble yourself and have the mind of Jesus Christ. And what was that mind? Who, being in the form of God, did not consider it to be robbery or equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. He had his former glory, and he could have said, came to earth saying, I am this wonderful. No, he made himself of no reputation. Taking on the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men, he's being found in the appearance of man, he humbled himself and became obedient even to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Therefore, God has also highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name. It goes back to what Matthew says, Matthew 23 and verse 11, but he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. Christ was the greatest among us. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And of Jesus Christ, God said, he humbled himself to the point of death, and his name is exalted above all names. When we are able to truly develop this type of humility, then God says, I will exalt you. He tells us if we can humble ourselves, if we develop this trait of humility, he says, you will be given glory, and your glory is going to be revealed. In closing, let's look at Colossians chapter 3 and verse 12. Colossians chapter 3, verse 12. He says, therefore, as the elect of God, he's talking to the church, he's talking to you and I, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, and long-suffering. In a world that's increasingly becoming focused on black pride, gay pride, exalting the self, pride is, you need to develop self-esteem. We need to put on humility. We have to avoid the deceitful sin that brought down even one of God's most perfect creations, the sin of pride.